Welcome to Dance Specific Talks. This podcast is made for us dancers, and our goal here is to inspire dancers from all over the world to become better, both on and off the dance floor. We want to provide you with a platform where we dancers can share and learn from each other. So let me introduce to you your host for this podcast, T-Sir, and remember as always, by dancers, for dancers.
Welcome back to another episode of your favorite dance podcast, Dance Specific Talks, released from Be Fit and Sensual. I'm Therese Allen, aka T-Sir, your truly host. This week, we are going all the way to Boston in the USA as we are talking with no one else than Dr. Courtney Livingstone.
You're going to lift that leg up, so same thing. You're just able to maintain that core there. You're going to put the band around the feet. Go ahead.
So what do you need to know about Dr. Courtney Livingstone? She fell in love with bachata about 4 to 5 years ago and entered the Latin scene. As a doctor, she went in as a physiotherapist and quickly realized that there was a lot to do in the dancing scene. Today, she specialized in dance-related injuries, and we are going to ask her all about it. But first, you already know what to do. Follow and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Facebook, and Instagram, as we are releasing a new episode every single Monday. You can find Dance Specific Talks on all your podcast platforms. And don't forget to share your favorite podcast. Now, let's get it going. Welcome to this interview, Dr. Courtney Livingstone.
Hello, hello.
How are you today? Where are you located in the world?
I'm doing great. I'm located in Boston, Massachusetts, right in the city. I live right in the city in Boston. And I am living here with my boyfriend and just sitting here excited to talk to you.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I heard you had some snow too out in your side of the world, but I hope that you still can dance inside and keep the heat up.
Definitely.
So I am super excited for this interview because you are my first doctor that I interview, and specialized in dancers. And I just want to kind of get a little introduction of like how did you find dance? How did this become a passion of yours? And how did it lead you in to becoming Dr. Livingstone?
Yes, no, thank you. Well, and first of all, thank you so much for having me on here. Very excited to hopefully share a few nuggets of information for the dancers and happy to answer more questions after as well. My background, I started trained in ballet when I was throughout my years, and when I was younger, started at 3 years old, and have danced ballet my whole life and continued in college. And then I went to University of Michigan, where I studied something completely different than medicine or physical therapy. And then finished my prerequisites courses in anatomy and physiology and all of the courses you need to apply to your doctorate program. And then applied for my 3-year doctorate in physical therapy in Boston. So I moved back from Michigan to Boston. And while I was working in Boston, applying for doctorate programs, I discovered the salsa and bachata scene in Boston, which is a very intimate scene. Everyone knows each other, as most dancers will kind of relate to. Once you start getting involved, you really start to know who are the teachers and who are the dancers that show up every week at the dance halls and things like that. So I became one of those dancers every Monday, going to Bachata Mondays at Havana Club in Boston, and slowly joined teams and worked my way up and learned technique and just dived right in. I think, you know, it just becomes addicting. You start going to festivals and you just really enjoy yourself. And I continued that throughout grad school. So I continued dancing and performing and then eventually teaching bachata, central bachata, not, no specific style, but just more of the general body movement. And partly because my ballet really helped me to pick it up quickly and to be really mindful of how the body moves and apply that to my bachata dancing. So then I kind of shifted to salsa a little bit and realized that at socials, I was having a difficult time really dancing at the same level on my salsa as I was with bachata. So I started learning salsa on two with Michelle Garcia and her team Volante in Boston. And we were just about to perform when the pandemic hit. So I've probably been dancing salsa and bachata for maybe about 4 or 5 years now. And throughout that whole time, I was working on my doctorate in physical therapy. And that is where kind of bringing those two interests together is kind of what brought me here to this point where I've taken countless kind of additional additional courses after physical therapy school to become more of an expert. I have, you know, all these kind of books here, like dance science, dancer wellness, and we've got conditioning for dance. And oh, wow. Just kind of diving into the literature, going to conferences on dance medicine, and now working in a program, a dance medicine program. So it's a network-wide program in Boston called Spalding Rehab Dance Medicine Program. So I'm one of the physical therapists who works with a medical doctor, an MD, who may do injections and other treatments, and then will send the dancer to me to continue rehabbing. So that's part of how the system works now.
Wow, what a journey.
From yeah, just going it's been a long time.
Bachata Mondays yep. to...
Exactly. Yeah. just a little dancer going, oh, this is fun.
What is the majority of like kind of dancers that you meet in your work in Boston?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I really see a wide range of ages, which has been surprising. You know, I think a lot of my colleagues who treat ballet dancers primarily, they are often like the ballet youth. If you imagine kind of the youth programs, there's a lot of dance youth programs. But salsa and bachata tends to really be friendly to a lot of different ages. So I treat, you know, osteoarthritis in the knees in my 40, 50, 60-year-olds who are dancing. And then I treat a lot of hip injuries, foot and ankle injuries, and maybe my younger Latin dancers. So I see different ages, different backgrounds. And part of that is really determined by who my information gets out to. So really, it comes down to a bit of like almost a marketing thing. So if, you know, people from my dance community who know me will come and see me from my bachata teams, from my salsa team. So they will come and see me specifically. And then the ones who find me through the doctors will be ones who may need some kind of knee injection. And then the doctors will refer them to me. So it does tend to come from different avenues. And that's something that I'm trying to get out the information a little bit more and reach the salsa community who often may wait a little bit too long before coming and seeing a medical professional.
Oh, I wonder why that is, if it's more because parents are more involved in ballet schools and stuff and kind of take the lead on that.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, or why that would be.
You know, I've thought about that. And one of the reasons I can come up with, but there may be many, is that sometimes I find people come into salsa and bachata a little later in their life. So sometimes they find it maybe in college or even as an adult, or, you know, maybe they're introduced to it through their family gatherings because it's cultural when they're younger, but didn't get serious about it till they're older. And what I've noticed is that that means that they often haven't laid the foundation of proper technique and training, but they jump in out of enthusiasm and then have to, as they get better, they realize the importance of technique and they come back to it. So I've seen this kind of cycle. I've gone through it myself with bachata. I just wanted to dance as much as I could. And then I realized, well, I got to really try to learn what's the proper technique that I'm doing. You know, what's the proper footwear to be using? You know, should I be dancing in a real dance studio or the cement floors at, you know, MIT where we practice, okay, you know, so I started learning that injuries can kind of come if you don't take care of your environment, your body, and kind of the technique to train the technique for that style that you're trying to dance at a higher level.
Mm. And mm-hmm. when you started working with dancers, what have been like the most surprising, you know, thing you have learned? Because you are a dancer yourself, but meeting so mm-hmm. many others, have you seen some interesting patterns or surprising studies that just been like, oh, this is amazing, I'm so happy I'm doing this?
Yeah, you know, there's been a few. My focus is on pretty specific like muscles and stretches or strengthening exercises that kind of surprise me of how helpful they are. So I'm kind of on the nerdy side of like, oh, this is a really cool exercise. but I think that, you know, it's really surprised me how much dancers will have other jobs that they have to do and then dance for like 20 hours in one weekend for a festival and then just go back to their, like, you know, wait, other jobs. I mean, we have dancers who really, it's a complete spectrum of, you know, of working, you know, hourly jobs of different places versus, you know, some dancers who work completely desk jobs and for the, like, all research based or, I mean, so I've been surprised of just how one diverse some of the dancing, the salsa and bachata scene is in their backgrounds, how they came to dance, you know, what, styles they like and are bringing other styles in, how much fusion goes on. And then additionally, from kind of my physical therapy perspective, you know, keeping that all in mind, I'm surprised how often similar injuries of like from sitting too much or looking at a computer too much really translate into some of the injuries they then kind of may lead into as dancers when they go for 20-hour dance weekends. So it really tends to combine. Exactly. Yeah, what was that?
No, when you say that, it really struck me, like most dancers probably, yeah, sit still like Monday to Friday and then like suddenly gets up and just dance.
Which is so tough. Exactly. And they have to, I mean, I totally understand that that's something that they have to do. But it does mean that if we can get a little bit of education in there of maybe finding ways to incorporate movement into their daily life may help to, and strengthening particularly, may help them for those weekend big spurts. And not only to prepare for them, but then how to recover from those long weekend festivals or, you know, the week leading up to their performances of their local community, you know, dance groups that they're part of, things like that. I think that there's a lot of education that could go into learning how to prepare for those big pushes and then how to recover from them.
Mm, yeah, because we never talk about the recover part. The recover part is those 3 hours of sleep from like, Sunday
sleep.
To Monday.
Just sleep, eat a lot. I mean, those are great. Good, you know, but there's often ways to really recover quickly that I've had to use myself when I got really into some of these festivals. And I've learned kind of through my own experience of dancing, because I'm one of those people that just can't stop. Like if the dance goes till 4 a.m., okay, I'll be there till like 4 a.m. Like I will push my body. And so that's something that I think many dancers have in common because we all love it so much. But it does mean that you have to recognize that your body's just not ready for that kind of level of intensity at that moment. And so if you do push it, you have to know how to then recover.
Yeah. Oh, I remember a period when me and my boyfriend had like a Fitbit watch, and you know, you could compete with our friends. And when we were at festivals by 5 a.m., we had reached that 40,000 step goals easily. And people were like, how? You know, they just woke up.
What are you doing?
Yeah, it's so crazy. True. I wonder if ever that would be an experiment to see how much liquid you're losing in a festival, like, and how little you actually drink water. And on top of that, like, how many steps do you take in one whole weekend? Like, that would be amazing.
And there are, and it's a really good idea, because that's part of what we're finding is that there's not a lot of research, nowhere near the amount of research of how dancers, how to recover and strengthen and, you know, prevent injuries in dancers as there are with other sports professionals. Let's say, you know, soccer players and football players and, you know, basketball players, all of them. There's so much more research, baseball, the metrics. I mean, there's so much metrics that they use. And dancers is something that I think we're starting to see a whole explosion in this research. We see from the IADAMS, International Association of Dance Medicine, is this big international organization that is trying to do exactly that and bring all of this research that we do know about to dancers and also to dance educators, so dance teachers and performers. And right now we're seeing that more in the ballet world. And we, you know, one of the things I'm noticing is we haven't quite brought it over necessarily to the Latin community. So that's kind of part of my goal, is to bring some of that research we do already have from the ballet community to the salsa community.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And so many communities out there that have so many different dance styles that is completely different on their bodies. Like breakdancers would have shoulder injuries that, you know, bachata dancers.
Exactly. Yes.
The other way around. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Wow. They've shown that too, that they do differ which injuries are more prominent or more common in different styles. They do differ. But something you had said earlier when we were talking is, you know, that each community is such a tight knit community that sometimes it can actually be harder to share some of that information between communities, between the salsa community, the bachata community, kizomba community, and even more. I mean, we find that we tend to stick to what we feel the most comfortable in. And that's what's great about this podcast and other, you know, avenues of sharing information, is that we really need to find ways to share what one community is learning and doing well with other communities.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'm super hyped about breaking or breakdance coming into the Olympic Games soon. And I mean, that is also another change, a game changer, because suddenly the whole world would then look at this type of sport and in that form, check out maybe what kind of injuries can you get, and like, how are they training? And, you know, so we definitely, the work of trying to bring up these underground communities and cultures and just get, you know, put some test on me when I go.
Exactly.
I would love to.
Yeah. And that's a good point. It brings more money and resources to focus on these sports that then will only help and trickle down to all different dance styles. It's very true.
So what, like, when will you go out and present facts and science about your work or dance related reports or whatever, what do you find most fascinating and interesting to tell people?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I've thought about this a lot, because I've right before the pandemic happened, I was just starting to teach workshops at dance festivals for injury prevention. And so I've been trying to decide, okay, what are the best topics to focus on when you only have 1 hour or so, 1 hour and 20 minutes to try to, you know, educate dancers on how they can help themselves. So one of the topics that I've presented on was how to warm up. Just kind of keep it basic. What are the components in a warm up that dancers need and should maybe make sure to incorporate when they warm up, whether you're a dance teacher and you're going to try to warm up your team, or you're a dance yourself and you come to practice early to warm up your body in order to be ready for rehearsal. So when I presented about warming up, and I kind of, you know, was picking out the points of information, I tried to include three specific kind of tools to use when you warm up. So those include mobility, stability, and balance. So when you warm up, you want to make sure the goal of a warm up is just to raise your body temperature, get that heart pumping, and you're trying to gradually raise your pulse rate so that you don't just go from sitting in a car getting to rehearsal or on a subway or T or something like that, and then have to go to 100% and get that. It's just not healthy for that heart to have to jump up and go, and it's not sustainable. So instead, the goal is to warm up your body, lubricate your joints through movement, and increase your body temperature and heart rate. So that could be from doing a jog around, you know, or doing some jumping jacks. I mean, it could be in any form. For dance, it could be kind of doing a yoga flow. Sometimes that can help. Just do a basic yoga flow, start with gentle movements, you know, like a cat-cow movement, and going into planks, adding planks, really building that heat. Planks start building that heat really quickly, as I think a lot of us know. So something basic like that can be just for the overall goal of increasing that body temperature. And then you want to focus on mobility. So I like yoga movements for mobility, right? So that's kind of, when I think of mobility, you want to think of getting the body ready for movement. Right. So mobility, meaning doing a little bit of a cat-cow motion. So moving through the spine, doing a little downward dog. I'm using these kind of yoga terms because I think they're somewhat familiar to a lot of people, but it could really be any kind of movement that may be similar to your dance style can be helpful. So if you know you use your feet a lot, you'd kind of mobility, you just roll your ankle out, you know, you'd roll your feet out. So basic little things of trying to get movement through the joints that you know you're going to be using. So mobility. Then stability is the idea of getting a feel. So you're trying to get a feel for what your body needs that day. So warm-ups are the time to kind of reconnect with your body. I think part, you know, speaking to our earlier conversation, a lot of dancers are coming from other jobs and other worlds and other environments that may not be as friendly to the immense amount of movement and connection between the mind and body that you need in dance. And so you have mobility to start warming up the joints, and then stability, meaning maybe a little bit of muscle activation of all those joints that hadn't really, all those muscles, sorry, that had not really been used. So when you're sitting in a chair, your core isn't very activated, right? Your back isn't activated. So some of the stability exercises, like a plank can start warming up some of the back muscles, some of the core muscles, all of these muscles that you need to kind of get a feel for if they're ready to activate and work for you. And then the third one is balance. So this is getting your mind ready. So, you know, the balance is a bit of a complex subject when you talk to physical therapists because there's many different systems that help you balance. We know for dancers, balance is incredibly important, especially because often we're performing in either low light or poor lighting conditions where maybe part of the stage is lit or some isn't. We are maybe practicing in environments where the floors will be completely different than where we will be performing, right? So balance is to be something that's constantly able to reassess how your body is with the environment, you know, being able to control your body with the environment around you. So when you warm up, that's your opportunity to get the mind connected to the joints, right, through all that nervous system, and know where all the joints are in space. So it's the three parts: mobility, get the joints moving, stability to start activating all those muscles, and then balance to connect the mind to the body. So that was a kind of a topic that I've discussed with dancers. And then by the end of the workshop, I would try to lead them through kind of what a 10-minute warm-up would look like. And we would kind of do that together, how it will warm up, will raise your body temperature, how it activate specific maybe deep hip rotator muscles, so some clamshells and some basic, you know, movements for the hip. Okay, now let's warm up your feet and toes, which is something ballet does really good job of, right? Ballet really focuses on warming up the feet, but a lot of other styles don't. And if you think about it, if you have jumps in your piece, landing, the first thing that absorbs some of that force will be your feet. So the foot core, as I like to call it, is super important to preventing kind of any kind of injuries. So anyways, I just will try to incorporate all of these different body parts into a warm-up and recommend that something either they come earlier or that dance teachers, I really push dance teachers to try to incorporate some kind of 10 to 15 minute warm-up. I know that studio space is limited and expensive, but that can be really valuable to your team to start teaching them how to, especially for your training teams that don't necessarily have that training, but teaching them how to take care of their bodies early on.
Wow, this just makes me think about, you know, how I never seen anyone warm up before they enter a social dancing floor.
Exactly. Wow. I know. And which is funny because... Yeah, which is so funny because I find that my social dancing is the best when I've done like a yoga class, maybe after work or something before I go out dancing, or a ballet bar or something like that. Before I go social dancing, I'm just so much more in tune with my body and my breath. So I really think it would be a great thing to start incorporating if people can find a way to do that in their schedules. I know people are busy, but that would be something that you could work with a physical therapist or your dance instructors or teachers to try and incorporate that into your program.
Yeah. I think we have always had a little bit of warm up in the Kizomba classes that we've been teaching. But I'm just thinking about like this warm up of the feet before you get into like 11 centimeter heels.
That just never happens.
You know what I mean? It just never happens.
It's so true.
And then you come out and your feet are just like, what have you done to me? What have I done to deserve this? Yeah.
Totally. So, and there's newer research. Speaking of what, so I just wanted to speak on this because I think this is really fascinating. When you're asking, well, what has surprised me? I think this is one of the other things that really has surprised me as I've learned more of the research is how the foot core, so really thinking of it like our abdominal core, there's literally a foot core. And whenever they give talks on this, they will they'll show a six pack, like muscles on the foot because they'll be like, this is how important it is. It's like your core, and we all know that your core is important for dance. I think most dancers kind of understand that concept, but they forget how important the foot muscles are. And we have four layers of muscles on the bottom of our feet. So many muscles, like so many. And they are, they're really, I mean, we have also 26 joints in just our foot. So if you imagine, like, our foot is meant to be flexible, but that also means that the more flexible it is, the more strength it needs to be able to absorb and protect all of the joints that those muscles surround. So warming up the feet can can be one of the best ways to prevent lateral ankle sprains. So any kind of twisting, you know, when you roll your ankle, if you strengthen your foot, they've shown in research that it's one of the best things you can do to decrease the risk of spraining your ankle. So that also decreases the risk of plantar fasciitis, which is very common among dancers, especially when you wear heels. So the more you strengthen your feet, that's one of the biggest things you can do, your foot and ankle, to prevent some of that whole lower body injuries.
Wow. I don't know if anyone that is listening to this right now is doing what I'm doing. Like, my feet are moving automatically and just like...
Exactly.
Just like, I haven't forgot you.
Articulate, exactly. And that's something that if people ever were curious about finding out different foot exercises, that's something that a physical therapist could really help, but especially a dance PT. I find that a lot of physical therapists don't necessarily really work the feet as much as those who are dancers themselves, because it's so often overlooked. So finding a therapist who really pushes foot strengthening is going to be huge for any dancer. So make sure you ask about that if you're a dancer listening to this podcast, that finding exercises using TheraBands, using, you know, doming the foot, you know, rolling out the bottom of your foot so that those joints and muscles are working. All these are little tools that you can find if you warm up your feet before dance class, can really help you down the road.
Wow. Foot core, new word. Check.
Foot core, that six pack. Imagine that six pack, exactly.
Yeah, because the only thing I feel after hours and hours of dancing is that I don't have any fat left under my feet. Like, it just feels like I'm walking on bones type of thing.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true.
That's a feeling.
Yep.
So when you actually are working with dancers, we have talked a little bit about it, but what are some of the most common issues or problems that you just kind of see repeatedly over and over again?
Yeah, I think ankle sprains is one of the big ones. So twisting that ankle in heels, or stepping on stepping slightly wrong or off, or movement that wasn't expected, and then you roll ankles. But often I see that the ankle sprains come from outside of dance. So it's more that a lot of times dancers will just, you know, things will happen outside in their normal life, and then it affects their dance, and that's when they come to see me. That's same with back pain and neck pain. So I see often a lot of dancers who have neck and back pain, partially from their being forced to sit so much for their other jobs. So not that sitting itself is a bad thing, it's just that our body doesn't like to be in one posture for too long. So I like to tell this to people, there's no wrong posture, because as dancers, we know we are putting our bodies into a million different postures, if you think of that, right? But what the body doesn't like is being in one posture for too long. And that could be really applied to anything, right? So even if you're in the best posture, most upright, perfect shoulders back posture position, your body's not going to like it after a certain amount of time, right? Mm-hmm. So sitting, what we have found though is that when we do sit and we sit with kind of a forward neck head position, that this position, like looking at screens and phones or computers, tends to put a lot more pressure and shortens the back of the neck and front of the neck and pulls the front of the neck forward and weakens the back of the neck. So it makes it then harder to maintain a nice long neck when we dance. And so you can get kind of stuck in this, we call it a forward head position, and it really tightens this. So then it starts kind of catching your neck when you try to turn it or rotate it. And so that's where I see some of the neck pain really comes in, because then to compensate, we bring shoulders forward to give the neck a little bit more support and stability with these muscles. So a lot of my training for a lot of my patients with neck pain, especially dancers, because they notice it, they want to work on their posture. They know this is important, but it's been a while coming, right? It takes a while for this posture to develop. And so what we end up doing is loosening the front of the neck muscles that are pulling you forward, loosening that so that we can get into a better position, strengthening these deep neck flexors in the back of the head, and then strengthening the shoulder blades and back, upper back. So these are movements, you know, like rows and pulling, doing any kind of shoulder external rotation. So being able to rotate that shoulder out and strengthening the back, the shoulders, and the big shoulder blade muscle. I think many dancers can relate to when their teachers have said, you know, bring those shoulders down, you know, connect your arms with your back, you know, don't give me any loosey-goosey arms. And part of that can come from strengthening those back muscles here so that you can connect your shoulder blade and feel it locked with some of these lat muscles and lower trap muscles, really to secure those arms so that when you go out, you're not letting it go past your body, which is, we all know, something in salsa. We try not to let our elbows go past our body. But the only way we can really do that is if we develop that strength. So when you're moving fast, you have the strength to stop your arm from going back. So that's just some of these things that I tend to see problems that come from more lifestyle issues, but then they really impact people's dancing because of the postural abnormalities.
That is so interesting, because I'm also seeing like the people I know that dance salsa, some of the leaders have a lot of pain in their leading hand, or you know,
yes,
that the right arm is just a lot of pain. And in Kizomba, exactly, I feel like especially a couple of years ago, it was like almost mandatory that you should put your head against someone else's head. So like there was a lot of pressure between the heads dancing, and whereas now, at least I don't feel like I need to seek that connection, where I try to keep my head on top of my body.
Right.
But in the beginning, you know, it was almost like, who was pressing the hardest?
That's so funny. I didn't know that. Yeah, exactly. And that's a postural position, right? So that you had to be in one position for a while. By itself, it's not a big deal. But when you have to add the, you know, over and over and over again, that same position that's maybe not as supported, then like exactly, you start seeing it, neck injuries. And like you said, leaders, if they're not supporting their arm from their back and it's just this upper trap muscle working, you're going to really start getting a lot of shoulder pain and neck pain, because you're using muscles that are just not quite meant to do that. So we want stronger muscles, the bigger muscles down here, to support it and stabilize for those leads. Being able to stabilize the wings. So I'm a big advocate of some of the lifting and strength training stuff that Sebastian does with the Be Fit and Sensual training. And I think as much as we can get dancers to cross train, the better. And it will really help to prevent some of those injuries that we see that really coming mostly from postural stuff and then strengthening, lack of strengthening.
Yeah, because I was about to ask you, like, what would be your wishes for the dance world? I mean, it is a very diverse world, so maybe you can maybe speak for the Latin side, but what are some of the biggest wishes you have for this community to kind of stay healthy in the future?
No, I think that's a great question. I was just thinking about that in preparation for our talk today, and I think, you know, my wish is really to have I would love for dancers to have a little bit more access to healthcare professionals to be able to ask these questions. I think it's hard for dancers to take in all this information if it doesn't directly apply to them, right? So if they've never had a foot or ankle injury, who cares? Okay, like maybe that's something that they don't need, or they're fine. You know, but let's say they've had neck pain, okay, they're going to start paying attention if there's something that could help neck pain, or that something flares up and they want to ask about it. But what instead I see is that a lot of dancers wait to seek help, and they may, you know, it's more from their dance instructors or dance teachers that they ask, oh, this is really hurting, do you have any ideas of what I could do for it? Right. So they don't necessarily have access to professionals who research this and actually work on dancers. And I'd love to, that's part of my goal, is to help create kind of a hotline or something that dancers can call, you know, a really cheap, affordable, like quick 15-minute call. Hey, what should be the steps? I just felt this happen. Okay, what should be the next steps that I take? Because I've seen the difference of something turning into a chronic injury because it wasn't addressed early on versus somebody who could bounce back in a week or 2 weeks to almost full dancing if they properly kind of took care of it, rested it when need to, but then strengthened when needed. And so if there's someone who could kind of point them in the right direction right when the injury happens, that would be my wish, is that, okay, let's get them on track to recovery within 24 hours after the injury, because we really can see incredible improvements if someone does the right thing. And one of the best examples I have is I've been asked so many times about groin pulls, you know, of like the muscle on the inside of the leg, and just like a muscle pull there. Let's say someone went to a split and hurt themselves, and those take it's very common with dancers. Yeah. And that's something that they have realized is, you know, it's something that I've had a lot of questions from and something that dancers love to stretch. But one of the biggest things not to do is to stretch so much the first 24 hours, especially the first week or so. And the more importantly is to either foam roll, which is different than stretching. So foam roll gets a little bit of, you know, movement and nutrition to those muscles and fluids and blood flow to the muscles. But then to actually strengthen around it. So to give support to that injured muscle. And so that one difference, I think, can help dancers to prolong, make this groin pull go into a 6-month thing versus maybe a 2 to 3 month injury.
Wow. I can so relate to that because I was a background dancer for an artist, and the last position was like jumping into a split. And as I'm there sitting in my split, I just feel this leak in the back of my leg, and I'm just like, it feels like something warm is leaking in the back of my leg. It didn't really hurt. I got up, you know, and then I told one of my friends who's a contemporary dancer and actually been, you know, taught what to do with injuries.
Yeah,
she just like, your muscle is bleeding, like we have to strap. She just took her shirt, strapped it around, she brought me home. I was like, I want to stay and party. Yeah. No, she brought me home, and the whole evening was like frozen bacon until I was so cold that I screamed, and then she took it off, Tiger Balm, hair blow dryer, and then back and forward with just cold and ice. The next day, I basically could not walk on that leg, and the day after, I had to do the show again. And I just had to change the routine of jumping into a split on the other leg. But because of her, after 2 to 3 months, I didn't feel that anymore. I have never jumped again in splits on that leg. But I knew that she saved it because she just took care of it.
Yeah, and that was so important what she did with that fast. Like what she recognized was really, really helpful to be able to put that ice on there.
Thank you so much for sharing this. Is this something that you actually already have? Do you have online customers or clients that you help? Or is this just something you would like to do in the future?
Yeah, it's a great question. That is something that I'm working on. Right now, I do see clients individually through Zoom, but I haven't set it up to see a lot right now. It's mostly for individual consults, dancer needs something. I have set up our slots in my clinic that I work at where I save for dancers. So I have slots each week that if a dancer needs to get in, there will be a slot for them, because sometimes it's very hard to get into the schedule because I'm seeing other patients and it's full. So if a dancer needs to be evaluated right away, I can get them in that week. So that's one thing I am doing to be able to see at least for the Boston area dancers. But as far as for the Latin community, since we're all spread out, my goal would be to have I'm working on my website right now, and to have like a button of, hey, I need a 15-minute consult. I'm going to sign up for the slot really easy right there. And then I would just jump on the phone or Zoom with them for 15 minutes and try to give them a little bit of some feedback. I have also done it at festivals where I'm set up like kind of a booth, and I just have dancers sign up for a slot while they're there because everyone's there. So it's kind of like, hey, I'm here. If people want to ask questions, this is your time. And then I will kind of just give some brief information to dancers, but mostly just so that they know they've met me. They know if they need some like real full-time PT care, that they trust me and they understand that I'm there for them. And so really it's a way to connect kind of the healthcare with the dancers. Because as we know, dancers like to go through their networks, which is great. And I love that. But I want to make sure that the information they're getting is good information and is really supported by research. So that's where I hope to come in and provide that help, that good, you know, reliable information for them.
Wow. This is something that every festival should have. Like,
right? That's what I'm thinking. I think it'd be great to have something like that. That's my goal, is to get something injury prevention focused at each festival. And we'll hopefully do more once these start back up.
Everyone, book Dr. Livingstone for your festival.
Yes, look for me.
Save your dancers.
Exactly. Yeah. In the meantime, I'll try to get some virtual appointments up and make sure that dancers have access to at least something to kind of quickly get some advice on the phone or Zoom. That's my goal. Yeah. Next few months, that'll be coming up.
That's amazing. And maybe if they can't reach you yet on your website, they can always go through BeFit Essential and kind of maybe connect.
Yeah. And my Instagram is always available at Latin Dance Physio. So if they ever need to reach me right now, dancers are reaching out to me at Latin Dance Physio. And I teach a Saturday butts and guts steps class. So that's where I bring in all my knowledge of all the, essentially the warm-ups, the specific exercises for injury prevention. I try to put them all in this 1 hour class that I'm teaching through a studio in Boston virtually right now, but will hopefully be more in person, but still might try to keep it virtual. So the idea is that dancers have a weekly kind of check-in for their body to provide them opportunity to check in and do all those things that I keep preaching, but can be hard to get yourself to do in an organized way. So this class is the opportunity kind of to try to fulfill what I preach and provide a class that dancers can start learning tools to reconnect and touch base with their bodies to prevent injuries. So yeah, look out for that Butts and Guts class and Latin Dance Physio.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
In the end of my interviews, I always do something called fill in the blanks. And you're not going to be my exception. So
I love it. Let's do it.
I start a sentence and you answer one word or an end of a sentence with whatever you want. All right?
Okay.
All right. So I'm ready. When I work with dancers, I always try
and understand their passion for dance.
When I feel passion for dance, I express
patience and kindness.
Nice. If there's one thing that I would love people around the world to know about the Boston community, it would be
diverse and accepting.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And if it was one thing that everyone in the world had to try at least once, it would be?
They'd have to try at least once. Maple syrup.
Maple syrup. Okay, love it. Okay.
It's a New England thing. So if you ever come to Boston, New England, New Hampshire, Maine, let me know. I'll hook you up with some maple syrup.
Oh, wow. And what do you usually have your maple syrup on?
Oh, every Sunday I do blueberry pancakes. Well, my boyfriend cooks blueberry pancakes for us, and we put maple syrup on it Sunday morning. So that's, or French toast. I love French toast. It really is up to you. French toast sometimes is just like a weekly meal, you know. I just love it. So,
wow.
So yes, it goes well with the kind of weekend pastries and things like that.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Courtney.
Thank
in the
you.
Interviews, I always give the mic to my guest. Where can we find you? Is there anyone you want to love bomb? The mic is yours.
Oh, thank you. I want to just thank Sebastian at BeFit and Sensual. He's been quite a mentor to me, learning how to really reach out and talk to dancers and try to get them the good information that they need. I've already sent a few of my dancers his way from the Boston community. So I hope people reach out to him for good resources. And his whole team is great. David and I think he has a nutritionist on his team. So get a team for yourself. I think the one takeaway I'd love dancers to really walk away from this podcast is that often you may need a team approach. If you're dealing with an injury that you've been dealing with for a long time, that sometimes you may not find the answer right away, and that's okay. And that it can be a journey to find what you need for your body. Everyone's different. So that might mean you need a team of a chiropractor, an acupuncturist, a massage therapist, a physical therapist, a dance psychologist. So someone who can help you work through your fear of injury or some of the trauma from past injuries. Let's say you need a physiatrist, which is an MD who can maybe order imaging or MRIs or x-rays for you. So just to recognize that as a dancer, especially as you start becoming a more serious dancer, and that doesn't mean you have to be professional, but meaning that you dance quite a few hours each week, that it's good to really work on your team. Make sure you have your support system there so that you can address things early and quickly and get back to what you love to do.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. And I can't wait for this, you know, team to be bigger and broader and more, more known in the dance community, because I would you know, everyone would have loved to have a number or just something to call when
exactly
it happens. Yeah,
and I'm working on it. We're going to try to get some group professionals together ready to help dancers. So thank you for doing this and trying to provide a platform for everyone to be able to actually connect and find each other, because that's one of the biggest issues, is just finding the right people.
Oh yeah, and when you come out with it, you know, let us know and we do another episode about
Thanks. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll have more resources. I'm hoping on my website to have resources of the tools that I use, that, you know, I've tried so many different therapeutic tools. So some of them, anything that I have up will be what I would use myself or that I give to dancers. So I really try to make sure I vet everything that I recommend. So I always try it myself before that.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for enlighten us as a community. And I wish you the best continues of 2021. And
thank
until
you.
Next time, I really, you know, have a good day, have a good week, month.
Thank you.
And we'll talk soon again.
Sounds perfect. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Don't forget to click subscribe, comment below, and give us a rating or review. We have a Facebook page, YouTube page, and we are on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, and all the other podcast platforms. We also have an Instagram, so don't forget to tag us in your favorite episode and share it with the world, because we read all of it.